The Rockford Symphony Orchestra Music Director finalist season continues this Saturday, August 27th at 7:30 p.m. at the Coronado Performing Arts Center. This is Phil Davidson, and joining me today is Music Director finalist Eric Garcia, who will be presenting Brahms 4th this Saturday. Welcome to Rockford.
Phil, thank you so much. It's wonderful to be here.
Well, let's begin by hearing something about you, where you're from, what you have been doing in the musical world, your conducting that you seem to do all over the country, and anything else you would like to share with us.
Yes, of course. Well, originally I am from Temple, Texas, which is a city just 60 miles north of Austin, Texas, the state capital. I currently live in Seattle, Washington, with my wife, Sarah, and our two dogs, Eddie and Hazel. And I am in my sixth season as music director of the Boise Philharmonic, and I am in my fifth season as conductor and artistic director of the McCall Summerfest in McCall, Idaho. It's a summer festival. And the most recent conducting that I did before coming here to Rockford was this summer. I was guest conductor and faculty member at the Eastern Music Festival in Greensboro, North Carolina. It's a student summer festival. And as guest conductor, I worked with the student orchestras and performance. And as a faculty member, I worked with the 9 incredible conductors that were part of the Conducting Institute. So graduate conductors on the verge of starting a career.
Wow. Sounds exciting. Sounds like a lot of traveling, too.
Yes.
Well, you may have alluded to this, but I believe that you are a frequent clinician for high school orchestras throughout the country. What does that involve?
Oh, that's a great question. It has a wide range of possibilities. So sometimes schools will reach out to you and want you to visit to do a rehearsal or two before a contest or a festival. So they're warming up for a contest or festival, and they want an extra set of ears. They want input from another conductor. And sometimes schools will reach out to you in order to come actually conduct for a performance or set of performances. So it's a wide range of options, but this is a passion of mine because, well, first of all, because of my kind of dual career in the professional world and academia, I absolutely love working with young musicians. It's a true passion. And for the students, especially at that age, let's say high school, it's a great opportunity to just learn how to work with different conductors. Every conductor is so unique. They have his or her own style. And so for a young musician to be able to adjust to that and to learn from different styles of input is so very important. So it's always a great experience, even if it's one day or it's, let's say, a full week.
Well, and you also host a radio show and a podcast.
That's right, a radio show and a podcast. It's entitled Noted. And the radio show airs on Radio Boise in Boise, Idaho. And the podcast is available anywhere where you get your podcast. So you can search it anywhere online and it's available. And I conceived of this idea during the pandemic because I was trying to think of a way, especially as conductors, I was trying to think of a way to stay in touch with my community, my local community, but then the greater community. So perhaps on a nationwide scale, how could I be of service? How could I remain in touch? And so I came up with this idea and I started this wonderful working relationship with Radio Boise. And then it evolved into this podcast. And what I do in each episode or two is take a particular work, let's say a Brahms Symphony No. 4, and of course talk about the music, but then I dive into the composer's life. Mm-hmm. So the history of the work, the history of the composer, of course analyze the work through its form, And this podcast and radio show was designed for the avid classical music fan, so that person sitting at home who is unable to attend performances but wants to stay in touch. But it was also designed for that person who, and I'm always thinking about this person because we were all this person at one time, that person who maybe is not a classical music fan but wants to get started. And it can be daunting to get started in classical music as a listener. So by offering up one piece per episode or one piece per two episodes, hopefully I will give enough information that will whet their appetite to come back for more. For that avid listener, I hope they walk away with something new. But I found that it's a great way to just stay in touch and introduce maybe an entirely new audience to classical music.
Now, what motivated you to reach out to RSO upon hearing of the music director opening?
Yes. Well, first of all, I consider Chicago my second hometown. I say this all the time because apart from my hometown, Temple, Texas, I lived in Chicago the longest time. I was here for 7 years as a student in Chicago.
Did you become a Bears fan?
Let's say Bears because, well, I was always a Bears fan, but let's say Bears because you have to remain neutral when it comes to baseball.
Right. Okay.
First of all, Rockford, Illinois is a very special place, and this is a great orchestra. And so I was very taken with the orchestra's commitment to artistic excellence, what it had already established as artistic excellence, its growing and established commitment to outreach in the community, and its commitment to music education in the Rockford community and beyond via the youth orchestra. Well, that was pre-pandemic, and I knew that I wanted to be here and visit and see what might happen. And then everything happened. And from across the nation, on the other side of the country, I was able to sit at home and watch all of the performances that continued throughout all of this, and to see all the incredible things, including a fun holiday concert, that the Rockford Symphony continued to do. And I was so inspired. We were all trying to continue to make music. And to watch Rockford do what it continued to do was just tremendous. So I already knew I wanted to be here, and that certainly just underlined that. And so I couldn't wait to get here if I was invited to be here and have a chance to meet all of these people that I was watching and see what might happen.
We know that the music director plans the concerts and conducts the orchestra, but what other facets of the position do you feel are important as it relates to the symphony organization and the community?
Yes. It's so interesting because I get asked this all the time. They see us on stage conducting, and they know that we program the concerts, but what do you do beyond that? And that's an excellent question. There's so many facets to that. I'll try to keep it on the shorter side, but to a great extent, we are part of this large team, which is comprised of the staff and the board. And the music director, executive director, staff, and board are in touch really on a daily, semi-daily basis, working out the logistics, every conceivable logistic of every season, non-musical logistics I'm speaking about, of every season. And so certainly when it's a concert week, we're looking at the logistics of when does the mic go out? When are you going to want to speak? Okay, now we're going to walk out in this order, announcements, so on and so forth. But all of these vital details to happen. And so we're constantly in contact, Now, while all of this is going on for the current season, we're always planning ahead for the next season. And so these are happening simultaneously. So that is constant contact. We are a unified team that's always making all of this happen. Well, in addition to that, because the music director is the face and the voice of the symphony orchestra, we are out in the community. And now, thankfully, we are out again physically in the community. And so if we're fortunate enough to have a chorus, which we are, then we are rehearsing with the chorus. We are able to come in and work with them prior to a performance. We are able to work with the youth orchestra, maybe one, two rehearsals a semester, just to give them an opportunity to have, like I said before, other conductors. And also go out into the public schools. And that can be from elementary through college. And either, if they have an ensemble, conduct that ensemble. If they don't, talk to them about music, about art, about what it is that the Rockford Symphony does and why it's so special. And try to get interest there for future generations of music lovers. And also to interface with the community, the donors, the patrons, the sponsors, because we are in a relationship together. We're friends. And so we want to keep those ties very strong and just continue to see one another. And when new businesses open in town, we want to be there for those new businesses and those new business leaders and perhaps let them know what's so wonderful about the Rockford Symphony and why it's so important in this community and what it does. And when people move into the city who have an interest in classical music, well, let's get to lunch. Let's go to coffee and let's tell them about the Rockford Symphony. So as the representative of the orchestra, we're always out trying to make contacts, keep contacts alive. We want to be there. We are of service to the community. That's what we do as a symphony orchestra. We are serving the community in our own way. And so as music director, that's really your job, is to be there in any way that you can.
Sounds like a big job to me.
Well, it's interesting because the quietest, perhaps the least amount of speaking that you do is when you're on the podium. And that's when, for 2 hours, you really aren't saying much at all.
You're speaking with music.
You're speaking with music. Perfectly said.
Okay, speaking of music.
Yes.
Let's talk about Brahms 4th.
Yes.
Why did you choose this particular program and the pieces to be performed?
Well, I chose Brahms Symphony No. 4 because I wanted a significant work so that the audience could get to know me. I wanted a significant work so that the orchestra and I could get to know one another. And I could not think of a greater work than Brahms Symphony No. 4. It is the apex of German Romanticism. It is Brahms at the height of his powers. It's an engrossing work. It's an incredibly difficult work, technically speaking. It's a very difficult work to put together. And so I wanted something for us to really sink our teeth into, and because of its complexities, really get to know one another. So that was the established work on the program, the large work. Well, I thought about a concerto for the first half, and I absolutely adore Eric Korngold's violin concerto. It's one of the most gorgeous violin concertos ever composed. Now, sometimes when people hear 20th century affixed to anything, then they might have preconceived notions about what it sounds like. This is a 20th century violin concerto, but it is born of the Romantic period, as all of Korngold's music is. And so it's lush, it has gorgeous melodies. It's just an absolute treat for the ears. And so any first-time listener will go out and listen to it again immediately. And when I thought of Eric Korngold, I thought, well, of course, Korngold was the most well-known, celebrated film composer of his time. Well, this year we're celebrating the 90th birthday of John Williams, the most celebrated film composer of our time. Seems like a perfect opportunity to open with John Williams and celebrate John. And I thought, well, we know his music very well. But there is this overture that doesn't get performed as much as it should. The Cowboys Overture from this early 70s film with John Wayne. And so I thought, well, that's a perfect pairing because it shows multiple dimensions to the music. There are these film composers on the front side that also have connections to the concert hall. And then there's this German romanticism link that connects the Korn Gold to the Brahms.
Well, let's talk about John Williams.
Yes.
I mean, my gosh, he's produced so much.
He's a hero of mine.
I love his music. And this film, of course, was one of John Wayne's films. Now, I was reading a little bit about Williams, and I think that he was influenced by Copland and by Bernstein.
Yes.
Can we hear these influences in this piece?
Well, certainly when we think of Elmer Bernstein and all of his wonderful Western film scores, it's hard to ignore that Western sound and any Western music that we hear today. But I certainly veer more towards Copland when I think of this, especially those early ballets of Rodeo and Billy the Kid and Appalachian Spring. I mean, Copland really did invent that Americana sound. If there is an Americana sound, it is Aaron Copland. He did create that sound. Wide open harmonies and spaciousness. And actually using folk and cowboy songs and integrating them into his music. And so if we do listen closely, I think you can hear similarities between, let's see, the first theme of the Cowboys and the Hoedown from Rodeo. You might hear some similarities there. The second theme of the Cowboys and the barroom music from Billy the Kid. You will definitely hear some similarities there, and kind of the melodic outline and harmonies and kind of jaunty character. And then the slow middle section of the Cowboys and the slow, gorgeous introduction to Appalachian Spring. You might hear some similarities there. But, you know, Copland aside, what I've always loved about John Williams is that really from the very beginning of his career, he was a singular voice. I think with any composer, we can always hear influences from other composers. But John has such a singular voice. It only takes sometimes two notes, an open fifth, an octave leap. When we think of E.T. or Superman or Star Wars, you hear those open intervals, and you know it's John Williams. And just maybe one harmony, and you know it's John Williams. So already at the time in the early 70s of the Cowboys, he was already John Williams. And that's what I love about this overture. It's John Williams through and through.
Yeah, well, the simplicity of his music is amazing.
I mean,
I think the one of the obvious examples of that is the simple notes. Mm-hmm. Of Jaws.
It's a half step. That's it. What other composer would have had that inspiration?
Right.
To think of just a half step eliciting the most scary music and one of the most scary, frightening films of all time. I thank you for mentioning that because that shows the inventiveness of this composer. And yes, sometimes he relies on just two notes.
Right. Okay, well, let's move on to Korn Gold.
We could spend an hour on Williams.
We could be here for several hours, actually. You alluded to this earlier, but he moved to the U.S., I think, in 1934.
Yes.
And tell me something about his success as a composer of movie scores.
Absolutely. Well, yes, he came to the U.S. in 34. He was invited to adapt some incidental music for A Midsummer Night's Dream, film production, and it was music of Felix Mendelssohn, interestingly enough, and it was a great success. And so for some years he traveled back and forth between Europe and the United States. Well, with the outbreak of World War II, his life was upended. unfortunately, so was so were the lives of so many great composers in Europe. Well, many fled to the United States, and Korngold Gold fled to the United States, back to Hollywood, and he signed a contract with Warner Brothers, and he quickly became the most celebrated film composer of his time. And in so many ways, we have him to thank for the film score as it exists today. Of course, there is Franz Waxman and Bernard Herrmann and people like that. Great composers. But certainly Eric Korngold stands there as one of the great visionaries of what this film score could be.
Well, then I think it was following World War II. He
yes.
shifted his attention to more serious classical composing. So let's get into this concerto. Can you give us a description of it? You sort of did before, but perhaps some more, and maybe how his previous work on film scores is kind of tied into it.
Yes. Well, after World War II came to an end, he basically retired from film composing. And yes, returned to these works that were unfinished, like the violin concerto. And prior to his work in Hollywood, he was a very serious composer in Europe, and lauded composer, showed tremendous promise in the classical field. And so he wanted to return. Now, it's interesting to look at this in terms of how young film was and film music was, because I think there is a part of Korngold that was concerned that his music would die or go away with the film. Who knew how long these films would be around?
Mm-hmm.
Who knew that we could actually watch all of these films with Errol Flynn now? And we can. But certainly Korngold could not have imagined that. And so he thought all this great music might go away with the films. And he did not shortchange his film scores. Like John Williams, he put his blood, sweat, and tears into these film scores. So the thought that the music might disappear with the film certainly must have been very hard to take and heartbreaking at times. So what he did was, for the violin concerto, was to borrow themes from his film scores. Now, in no way is he being a thieving magpie of his own music. He is not just taking the easy way out. Absolutely not. He's taking these absolutely gorgeous themes that he felt so passionately about and using them as the structure for this violin concerto. And they're from various films. The films are unrelated in plot. Typically, for the first two movements, they involve plots that are of an intimate nature, either romantic or tragic. So the first two movements are searching, they're introspective. And then for the third movement, the finale, it is swashbuckling, it's energetic, it's alive. And he took a theme from The Prince and the Pauper with Errol Flynn. And what I love about maybe the last half of this movement, because it's a virtuosic romp for the soloist, is the last part of this finale, you hear this outburst from the orchestra. Everything kind of comes to a stop, big outburst from the orchestra, and the brass announce this fanfare. And what I love about this fanfare is we are suddenly, in our modern ears, transported to the Old West. Now, this music has nothing to do with the Old West, but in our ears it does, because this shows the influence that Korngold had, that composers heard this music and it became emblematic in a way of, you know, riding in the Old West, high noon, name any film you want, and you hear it there. So I think what Korngold was able to do with this concerto was not only give us a great concerto, but breathe new life into these themes that had been previously used for very different situations.
Well, that sounds exciting.
It's one of the many great moments of that concerto. The audience, if you're a first time listener, you will know it when you hear it. But suddenly you'll feel like you're in the Old West, but you're not. You are in a film score with Errol Flynn, Prince and the Pauper. But doesn't it show the great influence that Corn Gold had on future generations?
Okay, well, let's move from Errol Flynn.
Okay.
To Brahms.
Yes, okay.
Symphony number 4. You mentioned some things about it earlier, but what is so special about this piece? And while you're talking about that, describe for us what we will hear. And I think Brahms incorporates some older music into this romanticism. Can you describe that for us?
Yes. Well, this is Brahms' last will and testament in the symphonic form. It was his final symphony, and he was 52 years old, and although he was very young at 52, he was starting to look at his mortality. And, of course, we know that Brahms worshipped Beethoven, and Beethoven cast a shadow over every romantic composer that came after. And, of course, after Beethoven, for composers to prove their stuff, so to speak, they had to compose a great symphony. They are now standing in the shadow of these 9 great symphonies of Beethoven. Well, Brahms, as we know, struggled for 20 years to compose his first symphony. Well, now, at his 4th symphony, he is in full command. He's in charge. He has complete confidence in his skill. And he really puts everything into his 4th symphony. He did not have a commission. He had really no reason to write this symphony except an internal flame, a desire to write a symphony. But what comes out is his most emotional and dramatic symphonic work. And it really brings his symphonic output to a nice, grand closure. And during the Romantic period, there is this interesting division. It's kind of an unofficial term, but it's called the War of the Romantics. And on one side are the so-called conservative composers, like Brahms and Schumann. Those composers that really value tradition and form, things like that. On the other half, you have the radicals, Richard Wagner and Franz Liszt and Richard Strauss. And these composers are writing operas and symphonic poems about stories. Well, Brahms in this 4th symphony really starts to make a big gray area out of that line, because his music and the dramatic impact of it overreaches any kind of barrier. And the 4th movement is certainly the climax of the symphony. Now, in order to achieve this emotional climax, as you mentioned, Brahms looks back. He looks back in history because, as a, let's say, more conservative romantic composer, he values tradition and history. So he looks back to the Baroque period. He looks back to Bach. And he takes a bass line, a theme, from a Bach cantata, just 8 bars long, very, very simple. And this is called a passacaglia. So a passacaglia, more or less, is just a repetitive bass line where you get a series of variations on this bass line. So each time you hear the bass line, slightly new music on top of it. And that's how he constructs this finale. So it's a series of over 30 variations. It goes by in 10 minutes. It's incredible. And it's really just the great culmination of what Brahms and his unique talent was to marry the present, of course, honor the past and tradition, but look forward to the future. This is forward-looking music. And this music would push romanticism far into the 20th century.
This sounds like a great program on Saturday.
It really does.
And thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Phil.
You have been listening to a conversation with RSO Music Director finalist Eric Garcia. Tickets are still available for this concert, Brahms 4th. which happens this Saturday, August 27th, 7:30 p.m. at the Coronado Performing Arts Center. Be a part of the choice. For tickets and more information, go to rockfordsymphony.com or call 815-965-0049. This is Phil Davidson, and thank you for listening.